Welcome to the Sell or Die Podcast. I'm your host, Jeffrey Gittimer. Well, in this podcast, we're going to help you attract more qualified, unbelievable, ready-to-buy clients. And the one thing you're hoping for, close more deals. It's time to sell or die. Welcome to this podcast. It's Jay Abraham's podcast, but I'm hijacking it for just a moment. You all know Jay. It's his gig. My name's Jeffrey Gittimer. I wrote the Little Red Book of Selling, among other things. And this is Wyatt Woodsmall, who's smarter than me and Jay put together. He taught Tony Robbins NLP and is an original licensee or graduate of the Neuro-Linguistic Programming Academy and is the first master trainer. I have to get the CV correct.
So FMT.
Yeah. Fucking master trainer.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
I love it.
We're not PG, but here's the deal. The reason we're all together is that we're putting a mastermind together of literally legendary people. And I have to include myself in it. I'm not very humble, but because I'm from Philly, no one there's humble. But can you imagine being one of a select group of people who gets to listen to marketing, sales, and language, literally from legendary people in their fields? You can only get it by application. There'll be some kind of a URL in the chat notes, and you'll be able to click and do it. But in the meantime, we're going to talk to you about what do you have to do in order to be able to get to that next level, and why is sales and marketing not there, and how what's Wyatt going to do? Because we're both, when Wyatt's going to be talking, we're going to be students. And I think that's the, you know, when you can get us guys to listen for an hour, it's a big deal, isn't it? Yeah, we don't normally listen very well.
No, we don't.
It's crazy because we always want to add something.
Our egos are, our level of humanity may be great, but I don't know that our level of humility parallels it. But
No. It's hard to be humble when you grew up in the Northeast.
Well, I was Midwest, but it's the same. I think when you know that you can make such an impact, I've always told people I'm not as arrogant about myself as I am arrogant about the methodologies that I advocate. I just am passionate is not even the right word. It's ruthlessly, fanatically, obsessively, inclined to want everybody to really get it because it's such a tragedy that they underperform their potential and their efforts and their opportunities. And I'm on a mission. I have been for all my career. I think you are too.
Totally. I just want to add that this is the first time that genuine sales meets genuine marketing for outcome. And it's a fight. Every corporation I've ever worked with, the marketing people think salespeople are stupid, and the salespeople think the marketing people are stupid. And that neither one of those things is true. They just don't harmonize properly. That's why we brought Wyatt, because he knows the language of harmony. You taught it to Anthony Robbins. You got to be doing something right, correct? So how do we harmonize? What's our deal? What do we have to do to get harmony in there?
Well, we already have harmony, so, because we're aligned and because our focus is on our students and on helping people to increase and enhance their performance. And we're not selling anything. We're selling people on themselves and on their own potential and how to develop it. And so that's one of the ways we harmonize. And we're going to be harmonizing with all of the participants in our mastermind.
Why are sales and marketing people so opposed to each other in a business?
Part of it has to do with turf battles, and part of it has to do with each perceives the other as giving away the farm and giving too much. And so that there's a built-in systemic hostility. It's kind of the same thing that happens in many organizations between marketing and operations. So operations thinks that marketing is giving away, and sales to some degree thinks that marketing is giving away. But marketing is simply reaching out and contacting the people then that the sales is going to make the sales to. So the two go hand in hand. But unfortunately, we live in a world in which people have become in silos, and that they they view their own narrow silo and everybody outside of it then they see as the enemy. And they don't understand that if the synergy comes from cooperation and working together to say a common outcome, and sales and marketing go hand in hand. So that and that's what in this seminar everyone's going to come to see.
Jay, what do you run up against when you're, because you lead with marketing, you lead with ideas, and then some sales guy has to go out and do your bidding?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I think the biggest, I use a challenge or disconnect is translating the belief system and translating the power. It sort of reminds me of a transmission slipping. If you were, so you got this wonderful machine that called a business that has the capacity to harness all the power and the turbocharger and burn the nitro, but somehow between conceptualizing these breakthrough ways to really enhance and multiply performance, it gets lost. You know, the idea of a torque converter, anybody who's not mechanical, but it's the device that lets all this power be controlled by the back of the car if it's a rear engine car, so it doesn't just blow out. There's too much disconnect. And I think it's almost, I was thinking about just now as I was listening to Wyatt, reminds me of a translator at the UN. There's very bad translation. And that's the first thing. The second is the gears don't mesh. How's that?
So let's talk about the couple of things we're going to talk about in these meetings. And this is very important. What actually motivates somebody or inspires somebody to get to that next level? I want to lead with Wyatt.
Okay. So the topic of motivation obviously is one that lies at the heart of all business and also lies at the heart of all personal development. And probably the leading expert in the world on motivation was a Harvard professor named David McClellan. And he said that people operate out of one of three fundamental motives. And he called these power, affiliation, and achievement. So when you deciding to attend our mastermind, you're going to make your decision based on one or more of three reasons. So if you're a power person, then you would probably write books called Unlimited Power, and you would want to then have control, or a nice word for it is influence today, same thing. And so that you want to come to the mastermind because you're going to learn techniques and skills and mindsets that are going to allow you to dominate and win, which is for you what life is about. Other people are interested in accomplishment and achievement. And so you are going to want to increase your revenues. You're going to want to grow your business. You're going to want to be more successful. You're going to want to move up the ladder. And so you're constantly focused then on what's the next step and how can you achieve that and how can you get ahead. So we're going to be obviously teaching a lot of great information on how to be more successful and how to achieve in your goals and your outcomes. And the third motive is affiliation. And so that people then want to be liked. They want to hang out with other people like them, and they enjoy socializing. So a lot of the people come to a mastermind simply because it's a chance to learn from other people at a similar level, and that the interaction is for them what brings joy to life and where they get excited. And so to have an opportunity to be in a mastermind with a group of highly successful people that are focused in the same way as you are is a unique opportunity. So that we'll be learning more about these three motives and about how they apply to ourselves and how we can determine how they apply to other people. So this lies at the heart of both marketing and sales. So a marketer then needs to understand that you've got all three in your audience And you need to appeal to all three. A salesman needs to understand that the way you sell each of these three different motives is different, and that not everybody is like you, and that we tend to project and think everybody thinks like we do, which they don't. But when you realize then that people think in certain set ways and patterns, and once you know what the patterns are, then you can make your pitch directly to what motivates that person, to what they value, to what they feel is important, and you're going to be much more successful. So many salesmen try to sell to themselves, and they'll be successful with the percentage of the population that matches their personality type. Whereas once you learn what your type is and what the other types are and how you need to vary your communication with each of these other types, then you're going to dramatically increase your marketing and your sales. So that these two ways to be more successful. One is working hard and one is working smart. So most marketers will reach a fixed percentage of the market, and most salesmen will close a fixed percentage of the people that they sell to. And that after a while, you run out of time, you run out of energy, you run out of resources, and you then run up against a wall. Whereas if you can then vary your approach to the market, then that's called working smart. And that's the way you're going to increase your numbers when working hard runs up against the wall. And so that's one of the things in this mastermind that we're going to be focused on, is how you can then overcome this problem that virtually all marketers and salesmen run into, that they may reach, depending on how good they are, they'll reach a fixed percentage, but then you plateau. And if you want to reach more, you got to be able to vary your communication based on who the market is or who you're selling is. And then you're going to increase then your percentages.
Interesting. It shows up in salespeople in the form of an objection. The guy wouldn't return my call. No. The message that you left them sucked. And it didn't relate, it didn't resonate with them. Therefore, they had no reason to call you back.
I love that. Many, many times I've challenged people similarly, but I've come at it differently. You know, and obviously, the idea of this is so mundane because it's talked about so much, but people don't really listen. Value is literally in the eyes of the beholder, and the value you create, I mean, you're selling someone just to return your phone call, and that sell has to be, I am going, either I'm giving or I can give you enough value that it's worth the conversation or worth the appointment or worth the meeting. It's very interesting. I liked what you really said. That was very well articulated, Wyatt. And I was thinking about grit, that so many people think grit is the fuel for achievement, whereas it's probably the biggest misnomer, because it's probably the path to such underperformance. I mean, I've lived my whole career, and people call me a motivator, and I think anything but that. But when they realize how much more is possible from time, effort, access, interaction, they get very motivated after they're done crying, and they literally do cry because they realize how harder they've made everything all of their lives or their careers. Very interesting.
I look for words that can define clearer. I'm not a motivation person. I'm an inspiration person, because think back to the teachers that you had or the coaches that you had. The ones that inspired you are the ones you remember.
True.
Not the ones that said, come on, you guys, get out there and do it. No. I want the guy that gave me insight to learn how to serve a tennis ball to the left-hand court. I want the guy that taught me how to take 0.2 seconds off my 100-yard dash, which dates me, by the way.
That's great. No, that's very interesting. I think you're absolutely right. I think that all the, you know, all the positive thinking and the motivation per se aren't going to get you very far. And it's a very rapidly dissipating it's not even tentative. It's so temporary, and it just basically vanishes. I think you really need to do soul searching and say, well, what does it take to take the rest of my life, career, opportunity, business, whatever it is you are, whatever your asset is that you mean, let me say, I'm ADD, you guys know that. I look at everything as we are investors and we're not spending, we're investing. And if we misinvest, if we accept a fraction of the yield, or we accept negative return from our investment over the course of a compounded career or life, how tragic is that?
There are three uses of time: waste, spend, invest.
Yeah, well stated.
Two are bad. You know, you can waste time at a bar trying to pick up a chick because you're probably going to say no anyway. You can spend time drinking all kinds of beer and watching Netflix, or you can invest time reading a book that will make you a superior performer within your niche, whatever your niche is. And you decide, well, they don't pay me enough. Well, that's its own problem. They don't pay you enough because you haven't earned enough. And when you're placing blame on somebody rather than taking responsibility for it, you will always hit some form of mediocrity. When you go beyond that and you're willing to do what's not being paid for because you're learning it for yourself, you're going to be way to the head of the class. You're going to be the Kobe Bryant who took the extra 2 hours of practice every day.
Interesting. It's fascinating. One of the people that I'm friendly with is the performance coach. He was to the late Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, Shaquille O'Neal. And he tells a story about the fact that, you know, they refused, first of all, they refused to be ordinary, but they also refused to do what ordinary people would accept because they knew that that was a linear path to mediocrity. They were looking for, I'll call it greatness, but greatness in performance, greatness in, you know, in self-respect and greatness in how they were rewarded both financially and by the world. So it's very interesting.
Well, good is the greatest enemy of great. And so that we have to, you reach a plateau and then you've got to descend from that mountain in order to climb a higher mountain. And so that, as you said, then all of these people were not willing to accept mediocrity and they aspired to greatness. And in order to do that, then they found a pathway. And whereas a lot of people then simply become satisfied or they don't set their goals high enough and they achieve their goal and they think, okay, I'm accomplished, I've achieved, and now I can rest on my laurels. Whereas that somebody like Kobe or Michael then never rest on the laurels. It was always...
They might take a day, but they're not going to take a month. And interestingly, they all had coaches.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Oh, willing to accept new information. Okay, but I'm writing a book called From Shit to Great because you're not that good. And that will define the individual. I'm going to explain what it takes to get to good and then explain what it takes to get from good to the next level, whatever it is. Because it may not be great. It might be damn good. And each person rises to their own level of competence based on their willingness to dedicate themselves to getting better. And most people are not that dedicated anymore. We have reached a level where people expect rather than earn.
Well, this is sometimes we make a distinction between goals and outcomes. And so that people will set a goal and then they work hard, which is great, and they focus on it and they achieve the goal. And once they achieve the goal, though, they stop. Whereas an outcome, you want something that you keep going, that gives you a direction rather than a destination, and that you keep moving in that direction and you keep improving and getting better and better, rather than just, this is my goal, I've reached the goal, now I can stop. And that's what happens to a lot of people. And a lot of it has to do with all of the talk out there on goals and on accomplishing your goals. And what needs to be discussed is how to set the goal in the first place and where to set it at. And that if we focus on outcomes and directions, then you can keep going.
The misnomer is that people say, well, I'm goal-oriented. Well, that's bullshit because it doesn't really say what you're going to do. So you say you're goal-directed, and that at least puts you on the path to achievement. But if you're outcome-directed, you've taken goals out of the lexicon and told me what's going to happen after that's achieved, not to achieve it, but What's going to happen 6 months after you do it? What's the next level after you get to your goal? That's the whole deal.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I've got a lot of interesting perspective on that. I don't think I have ever addressed it the way you two just did. But I read a piece of research many years ago, and it just haunted me. It said, paraphrasing, 95%+ of all entrepreneurs, salespeople never reach even their goals because they don't really have finite, reverse engineered, really, really highly formulated goals that they hold themselves accountable to on a performance basis. But I mean, by every element of it that interrelates, they just have these big abstract aspirations that are very, they're amorphous, they're very, very nebulous. It's like, I want to make $1 million. And there's no way. I had a client one time, fascinating company. They were doing three times more than their closest competitor in a very competitive world. They were about five times more profitable, and they knew exactly what they were trying to accomplish. And they always over-engineered it, and they always exceeded it, but they knew they reverse engineered everything they were doing by what had to happen today. They had everything by the revenues, by the profits per transaction, per client, per repeat. They had everything so well refined, but they had the activities, the actions, the stratagems that were necessary to achieve it. And as they overachieved it, which they always did, they had already in place higher and higher and higher constantly. So they never, ever were complacent with massive success, which was very interesting.
I feel like, for me, my goals are usually one word goals, because you already know what the definition of it is. If I tell you, one of my goals this year is library. And I have a 11,500 book library that I want to scan the out of print books and sell library cards to my library. So you come visit me online and have dialogue and come visit the library. We'll have weekends at the library, but I only need to see the word library and I know exactly what I got to do. And I put it on my bathroom mirror. So when I'm getting out of the shower and I'm admiring how good looking I am with all my loss of hair, I didn't lose it, by the way, I donated it. But the challenge is I get my full picture by looking at one word. And most people have this long, elaborate bullshit thing that they never achieve. And they put it in the back of a book someplace and they never read it. I see my whole life on my bathroom mirror when I get out of the shower in the morning. Whole life, everything, marriage, divorce, you name it. And the challenge for most people is they don't have an eyeful of their life. They only have an eyeful of their day. They have their meetings from 9:30 to 10:30 and their calendar bull crap, and they get alarm reminders and their phone dings more than it rings. And that's not me. I get a notice that I got a meeting. I've already prepared for the meeting because I don't do any meetings that I don't prepare for. And I got my words for the year. And one of my words is AI, but I don't need to go into detail for what I want to do. I already know what I want to do. And most people do as well. Most people, when they write their goal, they define it all the way out. Like, because why? Because it's not going to change. No, I guarantee you it's going to change, especially when you get in the middle of it and you realize, oh, I forgot to do this, or I didn't include this, or this is unbudgeted, or I had to spend $10,000 on it. Just my two cents.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I haven't thought about it like that. It's very fascinating. I don't write very much down in paper, but I am very, I've got an indelible sense of what I'm trying to accomplish. And I have a little bit of an advantage over most people, perhaps not you two, but over most people, because I have seen possibilities in the very, very real sense with the 1,000+ industries I've helped and all the higher, better, faster, safer, more high yielding ways to do things. And so I'm very clear on the fact that I don't want to dissipate my opportunity. I think a life is an opportunity, a career is an opportunity, business is an opportunity, whatever kind of relationship. But that goes back to this asset you're investing in, don't you think?
Yeah, totally. And people are, I know that you get this email because I get this email and why I get this email. I think I can make you a lot of money. And if you'll just give me your assets, and if you'll just give me your resources, and you'll just turn me loose, I can turn that into money. Like, dude, I already have my assets, I already have my resources, and you don't. And then I Google them, and they're no place. I said, well, just send me an autographed copy of your book. That's what I ask for. And then when nothing shows up, I know who I got.
Yeah, very interesting. That's, I think people, the aspiration gets confused for achievement, don't you think?
Yes, I think that's a serious problem. So,
hey, you, why don't you comment on it? I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things in neurolinguistic programming or NLP, we've got what we call well-formedness conditions for outcomes. So that you've got to have a outcome. It has to be stated in the positive. It has to be sensory specific. So you have to be able to say what specifically you're going to do. And it has to have an evidence procedure. And the problem is, Jeffrey talked earlier about vague outcomes, and they really have no evidence procedure. So you got no way of knowing whether you're getting the outcome or not. And so then you may invest a lot of time and energy, but you're not going anywhere. Today, one of the things with startups is that one of the more popular approaches has to do then with working to come up with a way then of determining with what they call an agile methodology. And so the agile methodology then is that, as Jeffrey had hinted at, you're going to be redefining where you're going. And so at the beginning, then you don't necessarily know the whole path, but as you go along, then you're going to adapt and you need to be agile, and as much as you know, need to be able then to switch and to adapt continuously as you go along. Because you can't know ahead of time all of the obstacles and challenges you're going to face. So the agile methodology is one of the most popular methodologies in working with startups. So this applies pretty much to everything.
That's and very
so,
interesting.
Yeah, that's agile, true. Hostile, and mobile is what you need to be.
Neurolinguistic programming, which we'll learn more about in the mastermind, is based on four rules. Number one, know your outcome. So your behavior needs to be intentional, and it needs to be then goal-directed, outcome-directed. So know your outcome. Two, have enough sensory acuity to see whether you're achieving the outcome or not. So if what you're doing is working, then okay. If it's not working, then you need to figure that out as quickly as possible and do something else that works. Rule number three is that you need to vary your behavior till you get the response you want. And a lot of people run into problems in that area in that they're so inflexible and they've got one way of doing it and they think it's more of the same or working harder or doing more when actually it's doing something different that's going to be the pathway to the goal. So Jay, one of Jay's amazing abilities is to figure out alternative ways to generate revenue out of a situation. And most people are simply focused on one way, whereas there are other possibilities and opportunities. And if you see those, then you're going to be much more successful. Whereas if you've just got one way and you're stuck in that one way because you can't change your behavior, you're going to have a problem. And rule number four is take action now. So none of it counts. As Robbins likes to say, only massive action counts. So ultimately, you've got to take action and you've got to do something. So anyway, if you follow these four rules, and which we'll go into more in detail, and we'll see how this works in real life and in real practical situations.
That's right. If you've ever followed rules, I can tell you that I've known Jay for decades. And we kind of make our own rules because the rules that are standard rules in society don't always work well. And so you have to work your way around it. And I've always, as a salesperson, I'll share with you, I do the opposite. You go to a class and you learn how to sell. I learned and teach why people buy, which is 1,000 times more powerful than how to sell. And they teach customer satisfaction, which is the biggest hunk of bogus bullshit on the planet. J.D. Power that has these, they couldn't win their own award. And so I teach loyalty because I want someone to buy from me again and somebody else how great I was. That's the whole deal. Satisfaction, there's no guarantee for that. And so you look at these little nuanced differences, and that tells me that conventional rules will get conventional results. And I don't want that. I want unconventional. Even if I earn less, I'm still on a better path that in the long run, I'm going to earn more.
That's Dr. Graham? Yeah, then it's profound. I was just thinking about that. It's, you know, I've never, ever tried for my own account or for any client I ever helped, and Lord knows how many I've helped on a worldwide basis, I've never even allowed my clients to do anything conventional, because it's pretty simplistic. If you do what everybody else does, even if you do it better, the most you can ever hope for is incremental increases. But if you really question, is this the only way? Is this the best way? Is this the most profitable way? Is this the most effective way? Is this the most enjoyable way? Is this the most high residual yielding way? And the answer most of the time is no, 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 no. And the challenge with most people is they don't really strive to identify, understand, discover, and more important than all that, actuate, implement, apply higher, better ways that are always out there. They exist, and the integration of them is so powerful because nobody else even would strive to learn them, let alone implement them, and then integrate them, and then make them a deeply rooted part of your being. So you don't just sit and go, what did I learn? It just becomes the way you are. And you're constantly, I mean, I always think of business as a kaleidoscope, and you're always adjusting it, changing it. And when you do, geez, the picture you get is always so wonderful. And it's a little too abstract of a statement, but I'll feed it back to you. You're under the net open.
So I'm going to challenge you with this. If you're listening to this podcast, you're at a level that is remarkable, but we're going to be more specific and give you ground rules that you can take out into the street 1 minute after you hear them and turn them into money. And that's, to me, that's why we're together. And most interestingly, we're going to learn from one another. Yeah. I can promise you, whenever I listen to Jay Abraham, and whenever I listen to Wyatt Witchmall, I'm taking notes. I'm not just listening to, yeah, he's one of the speakers. No, no, no. He's it. There are very few people that are fucking it. And when you reach those people, when you get to those people, you want to make sure that you have documented, because you're only going to forget, you're only going to remember 10 or 20%. But if you document and take those notes, you're going to win. And that's what we're there for. We're going to help people win in a way they've never won before. That's the whole concept of it. And that's the exciting part for me. Jay Abraham's going to help me be a better winner. And so is Wyatt.
We're going to transform your definition of what you mean to win. And so the trouble is most people set their standards for winning at too low a level. And they think that winning is something that happens and then it's over. And whereas the game is ongoing. And so.
If people think if they make President's Club, they've won. It's like you should make President's Club your first month.
Yeah.
And then your boss comes and say, how'd you do that? You say, well, I charge for those services. You can get your company to pay you when you hit President's Club.
I love it.
And that's where we're going. We're not going to be in the President's Club. We're going Emperor.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think the one thing that I think is really interesting, given, you know, all the noise and the confusion and the lack of attention today, is that people don't know how to discriminate. They don't understand that there is a rarefied, and I'm not saying this arrogantly, it's purely clinical. There is a rarefied strata of people who really get it at such a seminal level, so far exalted beyond the maddening crowd of mediocrites. I'm talking about teachers and experts, and you and I both know it. I've helped 300 of the world's very, very most respected experts, some very wonderful people, but I've also refused to help thousands others that they're dangerous to your wealth. And sadly, most people believe them. They follow them. They're their mantra. And I shake my head thinking, you don't even know what high performance is. You don't even know what controlling your destiny is. You don't even know what it's like to operate at, the equivalent of Mach 10. And you don't even know it's possible because you've been, I guess I'd call it hamstrung by believing in a lot of people that have never broken through their own barriers.
I'm flabbergasted at the number of MBA teachers, professors in colleges that have never had a job. Turn to chapter one. Yo, dude, if I need to turn to chapter one, I can buy that book on Amazon, right? Mm-hmm. What I want is someone that's been there, done that, been bankrupt, been beat up in an alley, and banked $1 billion when they sold the company. That's what I want.
Yeah,
I don't need somebody to tell me to turn to chapter one. And there's going to be a midterm. I don't want a midterm. I want to go to work in a warehouse someplace and learn shit.
It's sort of interesting. And I'm going to say this again. This is not meant to be arrogant. I told you that I'm arrogant only about the power of the methodologies that I've either pioneered, discovered, or the hybrids I've created. But I laugh sometimes. You'll see somebody run an ad. Like, oh, these methods have generated $100 million. Well, I stopped counting, and you probably did too, at about $60 billion, and that's profit. I go, you want to learn from that? I mean, this person's been doing it theoretically throughout their career, and that's the totality. They can acknowledge that they've impacted or generated. It's not very impressive.
It's, well, our society has bred that. You know, you can go on the internet now and you can be anything you want to be. One of the first cartoons that I saw from when I used to subscribe to the New Yorker magazine before I changed my strategy of thought, there's a dog sitting at the keyboard and he looks over at his owner and says, when you're on the internet, no one knows you're a dog. And that's the essence of what's going on right now. And people believe that, this is going to help me. And it may actually hurt you.
Yes.
So the challenge is talk to somebody that's been there and done that. I look for social proof before I get anything. Social proof is everything. And if you just type in the name of the company and add the word scam, you'll probably be pretty disappointed in what pops up.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's amazing also that people, the gullibility, people want to believe they want to believe in a promise that, I mean, I'll tell you a fun story. This is hilarious. This is a true story. I got a request a couple of years ago by a guy who wanted me to endorse his book on how you can make $1 million in real estate. And the guy called me and I wasn't going to talk to him, but I said, okay, first question, how much are you worth in terms of your real estate assets? Well, not much, but I'm studying all the people and I'm distilling it. And I said, I wouldn't begin to sully the integrity of my brand by ascribing it to you. You don't even know what you're talking about. But it's so easy when you can self-publish. It's so easy when you can get a gullible audience, whether you're selling real estate or are very limited performing methodology for anything, advertising, marketing, selling, influence, persuasion. I mean, and it scares me. I can go on a weekend and get certified. I can be whatever. And I'm nauseated by, I'm a life coach. Okay, well, tell me about, this is it. You and I, I'm jumping, ADD moment. I have the concentration of a gnat that has had a lobotomy. So, is it Malcolm Gladwell who talks about 10,000 hours?
Yep.
Well, I calculated mine, and I'll bet yours and I'll bet Wyatt's are probably going to be similar. I'm over 120,000. And I'm thinking most of these people are self-anointed experts. Probably, they got more time promoting themselves than they ever had doing it. There was a very famous, might be still alive, real estate person that I actually knew. And he sold real estate for about 2 years, but he taught real estate for about 20. And I was incredulous that he could have the audacity and I guess the chutzpah or the temerity, whatever the word is, to even purport to really know what the hell he was talking about. He never really done it other than for his first couple of years. I mean, you don't even get masterful in the first 2 years of anything. Jesus.
I had I read The Outliers on an overnight flight to Paris.
Okay.
I love throwaway lines like that. And I calculated my, before I got off the plane, I had to calculate my hours. There was nothing I could do.
How many?
So 25,000 minimum in writing, 25,000 minimum in face-to-face selling was more like 40,000 in selling. And then in speaking, I had almost 50,000. So I'm like rolling in, oh, wow. And that's the first time I ever affirmed it to myself. I used his theory, and it is a theory, but I was fine with it. I got off the plane. I hadn't slept a wink, and I was happy as hell.
I love it. It's, yeah. It's this is pretty interesting because, I'll tell you a really fascinating story, and then I don't mean to steal Wyatt's thunder, but this is a very true story. You probably know, maybe Wyatt may not. At one point, I had a seminar business that was as big as the people that you would probably know and respect. I won't name names because I have relationships with some of them. And we were doing all over the world. I mean, I was in Japan 30 times, China, Vietnam, London, Amsterdam, all the time, 5,000, 25,000. And we had, at that point, over 100,000, true story, documented success stories from businesses all over the world who had achieved unimaginable growth and profit enhancements using usually a very small fraction of the multitude of methodologies I'd taught. And I quit the business when we had waiting lists of hundreds of people because I didn't want to be intellectual entertainment. Those 100,000 were a fraction of the millions of people I had impacted. And I thought, I don't need to be a three-day inspiration, you genuflex, and then go right back to the lunacy of status quo existence and performance, feeling good about yourself. And then knowing, you know, it's you and I both know this, something like 90% of the books, courses, people don't do anything with, they don't even open and read it. It's their reaffirmation of how committed they are. It's really interesting, don't you think?
I think we're going to take this mastermind and provide monthly ass kicking.
I like that.
And that way you'll be able to take what we're giving you and genuinely turn it into money. We're going to have two live events. One will be in Charlotte and one will be in New Orleans, where people party all the time. And we're going to talk about how you eat the best food in the world and then go out and make sales. And there'll be a third bonus one that we're not going to talk about because you'll have to pay a little bit more money to do that. But the bottom line is we want to bring people together, but we don't want to leave them on their own. We're going to be providing information to you on a regular basis that will inspire you to go do what you have committed to do. I'm looking for a person who's willing to commit and then actually take the commitment out and turn it into money. And that will provide us with social leverage for the next one and the next one and the next one. Because if we only say we can do it and our participants haven't done it, we're screwed.
Yeah.
And that way you're gonna get a URL. You can't pay. You have to be selected. You're gonna fill out an application, and based on our interview with you and what we feel you can achieve, we'll either say thanks and take your dollars, or we'll say no thanks, or create a different group. But the bottom line is I'm looking for people that are willing to stand on somebody else's shoulders to be able to get to the next level and you know, get your hands dirty. Because if you're not willing to get your hands dirty, next chapter.
Yeah, it's and I think I am attracted to the two of you because, first of all, you take no prisoners.
Platonically, let's get that clear.
Indeed. You take no prisoners. You only really want to work with, I'll call people who inherently are, they've got aberrant genius within them. You just need to liberate and demand.
Yeah, exactly. We want to bring it out.
And that, I mean, in truth, money has never been my motivation for contributing to people and or impacting or being their catalyst. It's been my empathic, almost hurt that they don't know, you know, it's the idea of they don't even know how rich of a life, business, impact, and they could have. And all the words mean nothing. You got to get them to do shit. And you said that. I mean, there's a book that was popular, a guy that I really liked years ago, Robert Ringer. He was really character, and he wrote a book called Action. He quoted Einstein, nothing happens until something or someone moves. And it's true. All the, oh, I love that guy. Oh, I love that guy. Oh, I love what he writes. Oh, I love his podcast. Oh, I love his methods. Well, do you love them enough to embrace them? Do you love them enough to integrate them? Do you love them enough to even do diligence and make sure that he or she is giving you really viable beliefs and methodology, or whether they're basically, you know, they're playing you because they don't really have a clue what they're talking about?
Most people don't have a clue. They think they do. That's the whole deal. They think they got a promotion. They got a 4% raise. Yeah. They got a company car. You got nothing. You have nothing. Where's your leadership? Where's your authorship? Where's your social proof of who you are and what you've done? And that's what I want to provide. That I'm going to take on that responsibility.
I've been, and then I will defer to Wyatt. I've been obsessed with an integration of three different beliefs, and they're all the same. One is you grow or you die. The other is you expand or you contract. And the other is you multiply or you diminish. And the problem is the definition. Most people are content with incremental gain, and incremental is relative. I guess, you know, up to a certain level, it's still incremental. I don't think you've ever been content for ourselves or for anybody we've ever contributed to anything but really exponential. I always say you either live in the incremental zone or the exponential, almost said extra. Mental or but anyhow, you live in the exponential zone. It's way at this concept of rarefied.
You see the other guy. I want to throw something at you. My wristband says sell or die.
Okay. Well, it's the same thing. You grow or die. But growth, most people's definition, it is such a far cry from what not only is possible, but that should be the expectation. I mean, I can't imagine going through life knowing that all I've achieved, and it's not a criticism, it's a clinical comment. All I've achieved is that which is a little bit more than my contemporaries. I would be very disappointed in myself, but that's because I know what is possible. You know what is possible. Wyatt absolutely knows what is possible. And a lot of people don't understand that possible. All these words have differing definitions, but the possibility I'm talking about, you're talking about, I can't even reach, you know, the height that I'm referring to, but most people's definition of possibility is so limited and they don't even know it.
They think if they hit their sales number that they've done something.
Yeah.
And where did that sales number come from? And the answer, somebody pulled it out of their ass. And
I was going to say that, but I wanted to be polite. I was going to say thin air, but maybe a thin ass. But yeah, it's interesting. Why I haven't let you talk.
Well, that's perfectly okay.
Because,
anyway, oh, I agree with you totally on everything you've said. And so part of it is people have low aspirations. And part of it is because that they don't understand the possibilities and that they live in a limited universe and that they don't understand systems. And they don't understand that that when you change the system in a certain way, you produce exponential results, like you said. And I think that's a great distinction you make between living in your life of mediocrity or living in an exponential world. And what we want to do is help people to live in an exponential world. So it's about mindsetting, and the whole mastermind is going to be about changing your mindset and changing it around what's possible, changing your understanding about what growth is. And so instead of incremental growth, to understand that there becomes a point where that changes in quantity result in a change in quality. And what we're interested in is this change in quality. And to get there, then you've got to, you don't get there incrementally. You get there by doing something different, by thinking different, by acting different, by feeling different, by behaving different. And so, and that's where we're going to be focused in this mastermind.
There's one other thing that I want to focus on. I'm a reader and basically a historian about sales and personal development. My library is about 11,500 volumes, some of which I've actually read. What I found is you can't take a book and hold it up to the side of your head and have it pay any dividend to you. You actually have to open up the book and read the book more than once. And I'll ask people, when's the last time you read Think and Grow Rich? And then I'll say, well, how many times have you read it? And I know who I'm dealing with immediately when I ask a question about study. But we're going to go back when Napoleon Hill, who's probably the second person to deal with mastermind, the first people with Thomas Edison, Henry Ford, and Harvey Firestone. They're credited with the first, they were called the Vagabonds. But when Napoleon Hill put together his mastermind process, he's dealing with, you know, W. Clement Stone, he's dealing with Andrew Carnegie, dealing with a few people that kind of get it. But in today's world, you talk about mindset or you talk about focus, Napoleon Hill's word was concentration. And so we're going to take certain words and redefine them in a way where you can get it and take it for your own. Something as little as concentration can stop your phone from dinging in the morning when you're trying to do something. You just set it aside. And I'm going to share my morning routine that I've been doing for 30 years. And all I've written are 17 books while you're watching the fucking weather report. I look out my weather report is out the window. I look outside. If it's cloudy, it's going to rain. I put on a rain hat. And most people will go to work and complain about it. What's raining out? Like, I don't care what it's doing outside. I'm banking while you're complaining. And that's the theme of this. We're going to teach you how to put yourself in a different gear that stays away from people that are at the water fountain complaining about what did happen or what didn't happen or who made it happen or who didn't. I have no time for that. I have no time for that whatsoever. We're going to talk about investing your time forever, not spending it, not wasting it.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. I agree wholeheartedly. I think that also richness and wealth is denominated many ways. And, you know, understanding, playing a game where you make your own rules, where you can basically change them at will, and you can basically win your own Super Bowl and your own, you know, Olympic gold, but you're doing it at a level where, I mean, one of the things that it's fascinating. I read a lot of interviews of some of the just truly great athletes, and they never competed against anybody else. They competed against what they knew they were capable of. And when they achieved that capability, they were not content and sat on their laurels and go, oh, so good, man. I got 16 rings and I got a pair of shoes named after me.
Right.
It was sort of the beginning because they knew, I mean, they were intuitively so much more, they just got that there's so much more that we can be, achieve, and I mean, I just find the whole process fascinating. I think it's going to be really, I mean, selfishly, I do most of what I do at my age just because I want to grow. I want to be impacted by people who have a different piece of the puzzle. I want to know what Wyatt knows, and I want Wyatt to even, you know, one up me or take what I say and say, Jay, I love that, but you're hypocrite. You're not even living what you say because you get over here. And you as well. And I think that's the challenge when you're in an environment where people who are leading are content with themselves and they aren't pushing themselves in your behalf and their own behalf. And they're not selfishly trying to grow from the process more than you are, then you're in the wrong. I mean, they talk about if you're not the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. I think if you're not being led by people that aren't trying to grow themselves through the process, you're not in the right room.
I want to throw something at you. I picked this up random out of my shelf because it's one of the things I'm reading right now. This book is called The Thought Arouser. It was printed in 1930. And look at the guy's moniker. He's the silent partner. So he's giving you all of these amazing thoughts, and your job is to take them for yourself and use them in the execution of your principles and your business in order to earn your living the way you want to learn it. But you're never going to do it conventionally. It just doesn't work like that anymore. You have to be one level, two levels, even five levels above somebody else who's quote your competition. You're competing against yourself. You said it. I mean, this is how the world works. I want my competitors literally to hate me, because if they hate me, I'm kicking their ass. And if you hate them, it's because they're kicking yours. It's just that simple. And well, competition is really tough. It's only tough because you make it tough. You don't put yourself up to that next level. And you're dealing with three people here that have their shit together in their own piece, but they have been there, done that. And I don't have the t-shirt. I made the t-shirts and sold millions of them in New York City when everybody else wanted a bribe and I wouldn't give it to them. So you'll hear that story. And those are the things that are going to make this process great. So we've already been doing this for an hour. Somebody's going to have an editing nightmare. So we'll end this episode. Maybe we'll come back and do a little bit more, but I'm challenging you. There's a URL at the bottom of this thing. You click it, you fill out the application, and someone will call you to find out if you have what it takes to be able to get to this mastermind.
I agree. Ditto on steroids.
Cheers. Stay away from idiots. Thanks for listening to the show.
Don't forget to like, share.
Yeah, share with both your friends.
And subscribe to the podcast.
And remember, we have a free 22-day sales challenge. Just go to gitomer.com/saleschallenge to start you on your way.